Oregon's capital city is under a drinking water advisory for the second time in 2 weeks. A warning that had been lifted was just put back in place because there are levels of toxic bacteria in Salem's drinking water that could be harmful to people with compromised immune systems, like very young people and very old people. The situation in Salem just puts an exclamation point on a segment we'd planned weeks ago about the prevalence of toxic algae blooms in waterways across the country. The Environmental Working Group put out a recent report on algae blooms growing in number. Craig Cox is the Vice President for Food and Agriculture at EWG and our guest in the exchange. Hi, Craig.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. Tell us a bit about the Environmental Working Group and what it's about.
We're a nonprofit research and advocacy organization. We work to try to help consumers and policymakers make better decisions about how to protect people from toxic substances in the environment.
Well, it seems like your point in the report was proven in rather short order, because between the time that we arranged to have you on the program and got you on the program, we had moved from using Toledo, Ohio, as an example of a place where there's a problem with water, to Salem, Oregon, because it happened right here in our backyard.
Yeah, we saw that story. I'm really, really sorry that the folks in Salem are having this problem, but it's unfortunately seems to be, you know, more and more people are facing this issue, either with drinking water or encountering these algal toxins when they're out for a swim.
Is it just a matter of time, you think, then, before it happens in more places?
That seems to be the case. You know, these blooms are tied to overloading of water with phosphorus, and phosphorus is associated with fertilizers and manure and some industrial discharges. And we're not doing a very good job of cutting that phosphorus pollution into water. And we're told that with climate change, water is tending to get a little warmer every year, and that's a bad combination for sparking outbreaks of these toxic algae.
So let me understand the phosphorus part of this. Is it essentially that we are using fertilizer on land that then washes into waterways and essentially acts as fertilizer for the algae?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Wow. Now, I know we often talk about some of these outbreaks as blue-green algae, but then I see the term cyanobacteria used as well. So is it technically algae, or is it bacteria, or some hybrid?
It's technically cyanobacteria, mm-hmm. although, you know, most people think of it as blue-green algae. But in fact, it's not really an algae.
Mm-hmm.
But it can look like algae.
And what is it that makes it toxic? I mean, what does it do to people? What does it do to animals that come into contact with it?
Well, it can have a number of effects on people. The immediate effects of ingesting or inhaling, or even sometimes absorbing it through your skin if you're swimming, can look a lot like food poisoning or like a bad case of a flu. So fevers and headache and vomiting and sore throat and coughing and difficulty breathing. It can be very serious. There was a 12-year-old girl back in 2010 that was hospitalized for 3 days with a 103-degree fever after swimming in Clinton Lake. So it's for livestock and pets seem to be really more sensitive to the toxins. In fact, in 2017, there's a report that 32 cows died in Oregon after drinking water from Juniper's Reservoir, which is a reservoir on a private ranch. So it's over the long term, you know, chronic exposure, there can be liver damage and kidney damage and other long-term effects.
Does the toxic blue-green algae, the cyanobacteria, does it work on a system similar to domoic acid that we've had in the oceans that has seals wandering around looking disoriented?
I don't know about the domoic acid, but it sounds similar.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're talking to Craig Cox of the Environmental Working Group. He's the Vice President for Food and Agriculture, about a recent report showing an increase in the in the incidence of algae, toxic algae blooms across the country. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Maybe talk about your favorite swimming hole or fishing place and whether you've had to avoid that because of algae outbreaks. Join us at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So one of the surprising things in the report from the EWG, Craig, is that there's apparently no agency nationally that compiles numbers of harmful algae blooms.
That's correct. Some states will respond to complaints, or some states will issue advisories, like the Oregon Health Authority, for example, posts advisories on their website. But there's no systematic monitoring of algal blooms, and appears to be no real systematic collection of reports of algal blooms. So we resorted to just searching news media for news stories about algal blooms as kind of a proxy to at least get some kind of handle about how frequent these blooms are.
Now, Oregon, as you mentioned, has had a harmful algae bloom surveillance program under the Health Authority for a while now. But, I mean, are there some states that they're having blooms, but they don't have a mechanism or agency set up to deal with it?
Yes, many states, including Iowa, where I'm talking to you from, really don't systematically monitor for blooms, but they essentially respond to reports from the public or questions from the public about a potential bloom.
So in the process of doing the research and having to rely on news media for it, then what did you find out? What kinds of numbers were you able to extract from all these reports about incidents and the increase thereof?
Well, in 2017, we found 169 news reports about a poisonous algal bloom outbreak, and those 169 reports were across 40 states in the United States, so a lot.
Mm-hmm. And does it appear that that's on an upswing, or were you able to compile for previous years?
We looked at news stories back to 2010, and it's suggestive, but certainly not conclusive. But in 2010, we only found 3 news reports. By 2016, we found 51 news reports, and then I've just mentioned in 2017, 169 reports. But you know, that's not as good as a systematic system of reporting because, you know, sometimes news stories leave the web or outlets archive those stories. So it's suggestive, but, it you know, a systematic system of reporting would be far better than what we were able to do.
And there's a case in Oregon, too, that might give an example of some of the dangers of trying to go through news reports, because there's a permanent health advisory, for example, in Douglas County, Oregon, which we broadcast to for the South Umpqua River and Lawson Bar, because pools along the river's edge tend to develop blue-green algae blooms. So when it's a permanent advisory, it's not the kind of thing that's going to make news. It's posted on site. But I can imagine that that's the kind of thing that wouldn't show up in the kind of information you were trying to cull.
That's exactly right. And, you know, my sense is focusing on news stories is probably drastically underreporting what's actually happening out there.
Now, there is a map on the website of the Environmental Working Group of all the outbreaks and some pictures. And this gets especially interesting. What do the pictures show?
The pictures, you can look at they're essentially before and after pictures of some prominent algal blooms across the country. So you can see what the lake or reservoir looks like when it's clean, and then you see what these algal blooms really look like.
For example, there's one just sort of in the corner of our part of Oregon at Odell Lake that looks like green paper from the air. What information do you have, Craig, about how long it takes for a body of water to clean up and be useful to people and animals again?
Well, it's usually after the summer is over, when the water starts to cool down, that the blooms will start to recede. But they can be present in the lake or reservoir for months.
So it's really just a change in the weather. And so with the warmer water and the presence of nutrients, those are the things that are going to keep them around.
That's right.
Wow. All right, let's take a call here. We have Ann in Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about toxic algae blooms with Craig Cox of the Environmental Working Group. Hi, Ann.
Thank you. So in Africa, there's a spider called Stegodyphus damicola. And this spider, the female lays the eggs, and then the eggs hatch out to baby spiders, and then they eat their mother. This is exactly what human beings are doing to our Mother Earth. So how come people in the media are only allowed to talk about the effects of this problem, and they're never allowed to talk about the basic problem itself?
Which is our attitude toward the Earth, you mean, Ann?
Well, that overpopulation, people in the media aren't allowed to talk about over human population. They can't even, I think in 20 years listening to public broadcasting, I've only heard that term maybe twice. And whereas in the late 60s, early 70s, I mean, even Bob Packwood, who was Republican running for Congress, was talking about only allowing the two children to be offset on your income taxes. Mm. So how come we can no longer talk about that in the public sphere? Thanks.
Right. Thanks for that, Ann. Appreciate that. Well, there's no ban on it from the media end, I can assure you of that. But Craig Cox, is this something that that you frame sometimes in the work of the Environmental Working Group as among the issues contributing to pressures on the planet?
Well, it certainly is adding to pressures on the planet, especially in the developing world. In the United States, we focus more on what people are doing to the environment that is leading to the kind of problems we're seeing in Salem and across the country.
So the sense I get about the cyanobacteria, toxic blue-green algae, whichever name you want to call it by, it doesn't really go away so much as it's just present in smaller numbers. Is that the issue?
You know, the cyanobacteria are a naturally occurring organism, so they're around everywhere, usually. It's just a question of warm water, way too much fertilizer in the water, sometimes a drought year where water levels are lower, so the water gets even warmer. It's that combination of things that really trigger these poisonous outbreaks.
In fact, I noticed just this morning from the reporting about the warnings being reissued for Salem that in fact, the warm and dry nature of the month of May in the Salem area, specifically at Detroit Lake, which is the water supply for Salem that is at issue here, is listed as a contributing factor. So warmer temperatures, less water coming from the sky, these are things that are going to make these things happen more often. Therefore, I mean, are you thinking that in future years, Craig, that if you continue to study this issue, you're going to see more and more incidents reported?
That would be my expectation, unless we really get serious about reducing the amount of fertilizer and manure and other sources of phosphorus that are getting into our water. I just see no reason why we won't see more and more of these outbreaks.
All right, so you just listed a couple of things that are issues right there. So what kind of action, if any, are you recommending in the report on algae blooms?
Well, across the country, the primary source of the overloading with phosphorus is runoff of fertilizers and manure from agricultural land. There can be emissions of phosphorus from, like, sewage treatment plants or some industries, but those entities are regulated. They have permits. The amount of phosphorus that they can emit is limited by law. For the most part, that's not the case with runoff from agricultural operations. So two things. We got a farm bill going on right now, so we're working in that context to try to get more money and resources to help farmers take often just simple steps that would dramatically cut the amount of manure and fertilizer that ends up in our water. But in the long run, as we've seen in Lake Erie, these kind of voluntary measures, just waiting for farmers to agree to take that kind of action, doesn't seem to be sufficient. And I think we're going to have to look at some actual state standards or federal standards that that require farmers to take at least some simple steps on their fields to try to keep those fertilizers and manure out of our waterways.
Just in the very near future, though, given the regulatory climate in Washington, which is a bit more about reducing regulation, do you hold out any hope that you're going to get what you want in the short term?
I don't see much happening under the current leadership at the federal level in EPA, but I think it's really going to fall to the states, or in some cases even counties, are going to lead the way in taking stricter action to try to clean up our waters, because it's, you know, these problems have really changed. They're really crossing thresholds where individual people are being hurt, and that's going to change the political equation, I think.
We've been talking about the incident in Salem, which is actually two warnings posted now in 2 weeks. In the case of Toledo, drinking water from Lake Erie with a major harmful algae bloom, were there any injuries there, any people needing hospitalization or just otherwise being sickened by it?
We didn't find any news reports to that effect, but it was a huge crisis. If you can imagine 500,000 people trying to supply them with bottled water or some other source of water for 4 days in the summer, it was a huge burden.
And so it seems like what you're talking about here is, if this continues, we're going to see it's going to go longer than 4 days and affect cities of more than 500,000 people.
Well, it's probably already affecting lots of cities, and we're just not aware of that because, not to get too wonky on you, but under the Safe Drinking Water Act, which is the law that sets standards for what contaminants can be in drinking water, unless you're a so-called regulated contaminant, you know, where there's actually a legal limit set, then utilities don't have to test for that contaminant.
Oh, boy. Okay.
And so far, these algal toxins are not regulated, so utilities are not testing.
All right. So much more to come, and hope it doesn't come to a water supply near you, but it has already in Oregon's capital city in Salem. Craig Cox is with the Environmental Working Group, which put out a recent report on algae blooms growing in number across the country. Craig, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.